FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Carrie Lutz. It's 8/12/19. Well, John Rubino is with us. We've got a lot to discuss. Jeffrey Epstein, is it Arkanside? Is it really a suicide? Or or what is going on there? Maybe he's alive and well, and he's hanging out with JFK Jr., maybe with John F. Kennedy himself. Who knows? And then we're looking at interest rates plunging well under 2% on the 10-year, precious metals popping, Germany's economy tanking. Well, a lot to talk about, but John, hey, suicide. You know, it just seems like people are just not happy anymore, and they just want out.
Yeah, life is sad, Carrie. I understand why he did it. You know, it's just a depressing world. But, you know, funny is not a word you can use with something like this, because it's a dark subject across the board, you know, his crimes and the way he ended. What is kind of funny about this is that as soon as they put him in prison, all the tinfoil hat guys said, oh, he's not going to be allowed to talk. He is going to die in prison. He's going to, quote unquote, suicide. And, you know, once again, the tinfoil hat conspiracy theory guys were right about something. That's a scary trend. When the guys who are coming at it from the dark corners of the conspiracy world end up being right a lot, that means the world itself is going crazy. And Epstein is a pretty good example of that, because his crimes were just bizarre. You know, the whole large scale pedophilia thing is something out of European aristocracy or something like that at its most corrupt. In other words, it's people who have so much power that they can get away with anything. They don't have to pay attention to society's norms. Mm-hmm. And they can just blatantly do stuff that would get any normal person tossed in jail and then murderously abused once they were in jail. And they can do it with complete impunity. And so this guy apparently did that. And so did a lot of his buddies for a really long time. And now the question is, how much of his supposedly secret diaries that are now in the hands of the authorities are going to be made public? How many names are going to be named? And who's it going to be? Because that right there, I mean, if that affects the political balance of power in the U.S., that's a historically huge event, right? Mm-hmm. If it changes the outcome of the next election cycle, which it could, if there's a preponderance of people on one side or the other of the political spectrum who are named in his diary, then this is a major event, instead of just being a really tawdry, sad chapter in the ongoing corruption of American capitalist democracy. So we'll see. You know, we don't know how much is going to be made public. We don't know what's going to be in there, but the way the establishment is reacting to this implies that that there are some big names in there, those names are worth murdering somebody for in prison.
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more. It's a little bit scary. What was that F. Scott Fitzgerald said? The rich are different than you and I, and this is one of those cases where the rich are really different, where the same rules do not apply to them as apply to you and I, John. They can just do what they want with power and the ability to fix the system, which is what happened when Epstein got caught in the first place back in the early 2000s. I don't remember. I hear so many different dates. I know he pleaded in 2007, but it had been going on like 5 years before that happened. And supposedly, he's intelligence, a member of intelligence was one of the rumors, worked for some intelligence agency. Imagine if it was all just a big honeypot for some agency.
That's much more interesting than pedophilia among a bunch of rich, arrogant, crazy people. You know, the idea that that this was a systematic attempt to get dirt on powerful people and then control them that way. is that actually makes more sense than half the billionaires in the world are pedophiles. You know, that doesn't make sense to me. I'm sorry. Yeah. But, you know, a really complex, audacious intelligence gathering program. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That at least makes some sense because you're acquiring something of actual value, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's going to, historians are going to say it was not a good idea, obviously, but at least you can understand the motivation because the potential payoff is huge. You know, if you can compromise people at the top levels of government and business all the way around the world, you can get a lot of things done. Oh, yeah. So I get that, but that's probably the kind of thing that won't come out. You know, we're not going to be told that directly by the mainstream media or any government agency, because it was probably them doing it. And so who knows? We're still really early in this story. Well, so we don't know how it's going to play out, but wow.
You know what they say, John.
You could not make this up.
Yeah. You know, can't say I'm surprised that he's dead. I was surprised when I heard it, but then I said, why am I surprised? You know, this is totally to be expected. So a couple of other things, though, that, you know, A, you always think dead men tell no tales, right? But number two is, so they already tried to kill him once, it appears, because he was found in his cell, you know, not conscious or, you know, unconscious. So the authorities knew they were after him. If he really had stuff that Trump and the Justice Department needed, if he was really needed, they would have had him on an army base someplace, right? In a brig where nobody could get to this guy. So the fact that they allowed him to stay there tells me that whatever information he had, they didn't need, they already knew. Because otherwise, why would they leave him there? And then the flip side of that, you know, is... hey, maybe they wanted to be rid of him, so they set him up. But it just seems to me it's such a black eye for the government agency, you know, the Department of Corrections, whatever it's called, prisons, Bureau of Prisons, BOP, that probably is not the result of a hit by those in power currently in Washington. But you don't know. Or the third thing is that they just snuck him out of there, and this is a whole subterfuge. I mean, that is the third thing. And because nothing else makes any sense here, John, and it's so shocking, anything is possible. Because like you said, the tinfoil hats called this weeks ago, right? Months ago.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the almost unanimous consensus. Uh-huh. Among the skeptical category of observers, that there's no way this guy lives through his prison term and gets to talk. There's no way he gets to court and has to swear to things under oath and tell his story. That'll just never happen. And it didn't. So anyhow, this will get unpacked some more, but I don't think we're ever going to know everything here, just because the people who would have to tell us everything or the ones who would be implicated in it. So this is going to be something of a mystery probably forever.
I'm inclined to agree with you there. It just, you know what it's like? I mean, we were both alive when Kennedy was assassinated, and then 3 days later or 2 days later, what happens? Oswald is killed, right?
Yeah. I mean, that was clearly a hit by LBJ.
Yeah. Right. Well, no doubt about it. Yeah, I don't think there's any
Kennedy,
question.
And then Oswald.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No question. Yeah, Jack Ruby.
Is that libel? Can I say that without being sued by LBJ's family?
Well,
that he killed President Kennedy?
They'll have to line up because Roger Stone wrote a book about it.
Okay, good.
So where he clearly implicates our good friend, former President LBJ, who was a complete sociopath. You can't defame dead people as a rule.
So, I mean, the circumstantial story there is compelling. Kennedy was going to drop him from the ticket because he no longer helped in Texas. They had a big argument in the hotel room the night before.
Oh, I didn't hear about that.
And Johnson was being investigated for fraud, which would put him in jail the minute he left office. So, and they were in Texas. They were on his turf. So, Kennedy gets shot. Surprise, surprise.
And there was dinner with LBJ shows up at dinner that's being held outside of Dallas where by a well-known oilman. And who's at the dinner but Nixon and J. Edgar Hoover. So,
oh, I didn't hear that. Okay, well, then they all did it. You know, it was collusion. But they all got away with it.
Pretty much. And if you ever want to check out more about it, just go see The Men Who Killed Kennedy. It's on YouTube. And there's the last episode, which was never aired on PBS, because Lady Bird Johnson, his wife, was still alive and threatened lawsuits and everything else. So it never got shown. And that's where they really connect the dots. And they say, this is what happened. The only print found at the Texas book, I don't want to go down this road, but anyway, I just have to say this. The only fingerprint found in the in that floor in the Texas book depository where the rifle was found was this guy, Mac Wallace. It was his handprint, and he was LBJ's purported personal hitman. And it just goes on and on. It's like peeling away the layers of an onion, John. But anyways, this
Gary, I would love to have a personal hitman.
Hey,
the LBJ have one of those? That would be a nice thing to buy with some extra money.
I think everyone should have one.
Yeah.
It would be a lot more well-behaved, pleasant planet if everybody had their own hitman and you knew it. You know, you got to know.
Mutually assured destruction.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. It'd be great. So, hey, what about interest rates?
Okay, plunging. Let's talk about this actual finance stuff.
This is really bad. Interest rates plunging, yield curve, all that. It's like guaranteed, baked in the cake, that there's another recession on the way.
Well, the financial system is telling the Fed it has to cut rates.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how the financial system does that. It sells stocks. Stock market is tanking today, or has already tanked. The market is closed. Mm-hmm. Long-term interest rates are plunging. You know, the 10-year rate is 1.65% or something right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mortgages key off the 10-year treasury. And so if 10-year treasuries go to about 1.5%, that implies a 3% or so 30-year mortgage rate, which means, you know, refinancing is just going to explode if this keeps happening. And meanwhile, 30-year treasuries are rapidly approaching 2%. This is really low interest rates for us.
It's frighteningly low.
Approaching record lows.
Where they're going to pay you. I read, I think it was Sweden or someplace, they're paying people to take mortgages now.
Yeah, and now we sold our house just lately, and I'm holding out for the next one until the bank has to pay me for a mortgage.
Yeah, hey.
And, or you'll just... We're not that far away.
Yeah, you'll just loan yourself the money and then agree not to pay yourself back. Right?
I have to think that through. Yeah, sort of.
Hey, it's really... No, that's downright frightening to me.
To own a house and have it be a positive cash flow proposition, nobody's ever done that before.
No,
with your personal property.
Oh, well, it can be done. If you're content living in a closet with Airbnb now, you could just rent out the whole place, rent out every square inch.
Yeah.
And
then it's a rental house, and that can have positive cash flow.
Yeah. I know
somebody. It's just the place you're living.
Yeah.
That's a money pit normally. Oh, yeah. But now, you know, in a negative mortgage rate world, pays you to have a house.
Right. But, like, debtors get paid to borrow money and not pay it back. I mean, that's a mixed up, shook up world. Just as an aside, I knew somebody has a house by L.A., hasn't made a mortgage payment. It might be going on 12 years now, and has been doing Airbnb and movie site rentals and making a six-figure income off the house. I mean, how good is that?
Interesting.
Yeah. Anyway, only in America.
You know, hotels are not happy about that trend, but otherwise, I think it's pretty cool that people can use their stuff to generate cash. Because, your car can be an Uber vehicle, and your house can be Airbnb, and it converts these negative cash flow possessions, you know, the consumables, into positive cash flow capital assets. So that that's cool in that way. And there are other reasons, I guess, that, that people complain about them. But in general, it seems like a nice idea.
Well, let me tell you about hotels. Like hotels, like I used to love staying in hotels, but they've become the biggest ripoff on the planet, John. They got all these fees, these nickel and dime, you know, they just drive you to distraction with all of these BS fees, resort fees, you know, all these things. Their food is marked up 500% in their restaurants. And then you pay like just ridiculous things. You go stay in somebody's house for $50 a night. Like in Vancouver, I stayed in an Airbnb. I found it like the last minute. It was $85 a night. It was within walking distance of the Sprott conference. It was a beautiful one bedroom, nicely decorated. It actually had air conditioning, which is real unusual in Vancouver. Usually you don't have AC in a lot of places. And it was spotless. They had really nice quality linens. I was like, why stay in a hotel? And I could cook myself breakfast. The other thing, you're staying in a hotel, especially resort, you got to have 2-3 meals a day in that place and get totally hosed on your food. It just, you just don't get enough anymore for the value. There's not enough value there, especially now that you have an alternative. And it's
That's why capitalism is so, is such a self-correcting system, right? Mm-hmm. This is how progress happens. If an industry doesn't take care of its customers, somebody comes along with a better idea and you get creative destruction, where Airbnb just eliminates a big chunk of the hotel industry and Uber eliminates a big chunk of the taxi industry, because taxis didn't really take care of their customers back in the day either.
No, they're a monopoly. They got a franchise from the city. And there's no competition except among other franchised drivers. There is no competition, no price competition. Now, the Uber concept works wonderfully. I take them wherever I go because I hate taxi cabs because they're a lot cleaner, the Ubers, everything else. So eventually, even these government-imposed monopolies, the market figures out a way to cut them out of the equation. And you know what? It's much better. And you meet interesting people at these Airbnbs. Generally, I like to rent out the entire place. I don't really want to have roommates. It's just my own preference, but sometimes not possible or they're so expensive, but it really is a great deal. Hey, but, you know, just like capitalism finds a way to deal with inefficient or unfair markets like taxis and hotels, it also figures out a way to deal with paper money, right? The market figures all this stuff out. Witness our recent, just today, major, well, I don't want to quite go major, but substantial increase gold prices, looking close to $15 the ounce. Gold is $1,511 on the bid. Silver broke $17. Again, both of them, gold broke $1,500. Silver broke $17 the ounce on the same day. Generally a bullish signal. However, the stocks have gotten slammed. Divergence between stocks and the metal stocks and the metals themselves generally says we're in for some type of decline, but I will reserve judgment since I've been wrong all along, John.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next.
Today's show is brought to you by U.S. Gold Corp. U.S. Gold Corp. is a U.S.-focused gold exploration and development company advancing high-potential projects in Wyoming and Nevada. U.S. Gold Corp. has consolidated a district on Nevada's productive Cortex Trend and is advancing the Copper King project towards production in Wyoming. Led by a team of prolific company builders and renowned explorers, including Dave Mathewson, who is directly responsible for several major Nevada gold discoveries, U.S. Gold Corp. is well-capitalized and has an extremely tight share structure with less than 20 million shares outstanding and trades on the NASDAQ, a major exchange, under the ticker symbol USAU. To learn more, go to usgoldcorp.gold. That's usgoldcorp.gold.
The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Well, stocks, gold and silver mining stocks will go down from profit taking on days when the metals are up every once in a while. It's not a major thing. It's just that the holders of stocks have a lot of embedded profits now. So you're going to see these bouts of profit taking where people say, okay, I'm up by 60% in this thing. Let me take my original investment out of it. And then I'll play with house money from then on, you know, and you see a lot of that. And that's a reasonable strategy when you've got volatile stocks that have done really well for a stretch. And that leads to a day like this, when gold is up $14 and the major gold stocks are down by 0.5% or whatever. It's, you know, counterintuitive, but it happens because there are different forces at work in those two markets, where usually it's the same thing affecting both markets, but every once in a while you get two different mindsets there.
Yeah, divergence.
So not a big deal.
No, it's nothing to be concerned about in the long run. Just something to keep note of. If it continues on, then it's something you got to be a little concerned about.
Well, yeah, you know, a correction in precious metals will be completely normal right now. You look at the commitment of traders report, the speculators are about as long as they have ever been.
Yeah, so, like the speculators are right for once. Isn't it amazing, huh?
So far. Yeah. You know, I've been trained by my past mistakes to take that stuff pretty seriously. You know, sometimes it takes a long time for the futures market structure to work itself out in precious metals prices, but it always seems to, you know, someday physical demand is just going to steamroll the paper markets.
Yeah.
And speculators and the commercials and the futures markets won't matter anymore. And hopefully this is that time. Ooh. But I've thought that a few times in the past, and boom, it just when I'm ready to ignore the futures markets, they come back and assert themselves with a vengeance. So you never know. You can't really tell.
At your peril. Well, Charles Nenner, good friend, he's saying $2,500 gold before too long. He didn't give me a time frame, and I made the mistake. I neglected to ask him. But a good friend, Peter Hug, over at Kitco, said $1,550 at the end of the year. It's August, and we're at $1,512. He might be a little on the conservative side.
Yeah, you know, $1,550 is one good day away.
Yeah, that's one trade tariff away from, you know, because what was great, John, is we're in Vancouver at Sprott. And, you know, I've seen more people attend. It was a healthy attendance. They didn't lose any money. Don't take a collection up for Sprott. You know, they've been killing it. They've been crushing the market over the past couple of months. Whatever losses they might have incurred over the past 6 years, they've just killed it. So. But while we're there, you know, and gold's languishing a little bit, the 1490s range, then Trump implements the 10% tariff on the remaining Chinese goods that weren't under tariff from his previous proclamation, and boom, $32 an ounce. That would think was on Friday. And then the following Monday, it went up 25 or something like that. I mean, that was like more action we'd seen in the metals markets than we'd seen in years, John.
That's cool that happened while you guys were at the conference.
Yeah, that must have been so I interview a company. It's a client, Northern Vertex. We had done a webcast for them a while ago. And incidentally, when we did the webcast, I'm just tooting my own horn here, which if I don't, nobody else will. You know that. You know how that works, right? You know, we started out, and like I said, we had nothing to do with it, but the stock was 17.7 cents. Now it's at 22.5 cents. It's been bouncing around there, mainly just because it's a producer. It's a new producer. They have a mine in Arizona. And I said to him, you know, what does $30 an ounce mean to you? And he said, well, we are producing 3,000 ounces a month now, which is a nice small mine, but very profitable, even at current prices. But when you do the math, $30 times 3,000 is 90,000 times 12 is 1,080,000, which for a small company like them, they don't have a huge share float. It comes out to like a lot of money, John.
Well, and it's found money. That's the thing about mining is when the price of what you're selling goes up, your costs don't change much. So it's all profit. Mm-hmm. And that's why these things are so highly leveraged and the stocks are so volatile, because you can see a 50% move in the underlying metal can result in a 500% increase in the operating profit of a mine. And that's why the stocks rocket when the metals start moving.
Yeah. And, oh, yeah. Leverage.
You know, that's
called leverage. Yeah.
Right? Leverage. That's right. And that's just how it works in these kinds of markets. And you know what else is interesting here is gold is not all that far from a record high now.
In 73 countries, it's there already.
Yeah. But even in the U.S., 15-something is not that far from 19-something.
No, not at all.
You know, it feels close when you look at the number. But if you look at silver, it's a long way from its record high. You know, $17 is a long way from 50.
You know, silver is the only commodity that has not made a high in 40-plus years. You know that? Because it made its last high. I mean, remember, its last high was 79.
Yeah. It got close in 2011.
Yeah, but it didn't do it.
No. And, and it's way, way, way far away from its recent record mm-hmm. high. So silver could have kind of a Bitcoin-esque arc to it.
Exactly.
Once it really gets going, just because there's so much room up above it. Mm-hmm. That it's already traveled in its recent past.
Yes.
So, you know, you're going to be able to look at $30 silver pretty soon, hopefully, 20, and say, you know, it's still way off its recent high, and gold is way close to its recent high, so buy silver. You know, that story is going to be plausible for a long way on this upswing if silver is going to, you know, do what it did before.
Oh, totally, totally agree with you. I mean, you're preaching to the choir here. We do that a lot, but unfortunately, nobody else was listening to us before except the choir. So now there's a lot of substance to it. You know, the gold to silver ratio still at 88.685, John. That is like a real blast, and it's just unsustainable when it gets to those levels. Something has to give. And look, if we have $2,500 gold. And I don't want to get all euphoric. You know, we're not there yet. There's a long way between here and there, but it seems within reach because, as Peter Hug said, the last technical resistance point was 1420. There's nothing above that. So 1420 is support, and now we're at 1511. So 1500 is the new support, and really, you know, 1500 and change. So it's very likely that it's going to happen. But if you think there's a possibility of $1,800, $2,500 gold, by its nature, silver is going to join the party here. Almost has to, because we're using more silver than ever. You know what the difference between, there's more production of silver now than there was back in 11, but the difference is there's no investment demand, not meaningful. It's like less than half of what it was. You get any uptick in silver investment demand, John, that thing is going to spike off the charts. And, you know, we just have to wait back and see. I've still always felt that mid fourth quarter is always the best time for precious metals. But you know what? When they go on a bull, they don't care about what time of year it is, you know? They really don't. And it's all pretty exciting because everybody told us how stupid we were all these years, John, you know?
Well,
we took a lot of abuse.
We were stupid in terms of timing. Yeah, of course we liked this stuff way too soon. But the story was always right. And it's finally starting to be reflected in market action. So good. You know, the U.S. government just announced that its year-to-date 2019 deficit exceeded all of 2018's deficit.
That doesn't matter.
And this is 10 years into a recovery with a supposedly strong economy.
The best economy ever. You know, what I really learned from this, John, more than anything, I've always been into technical analysis, okay? But I've never actually handled my investments in accord with it. But I always used technical measures to try to get an idea of where we were in the market. And what it tells me is, for 8 years, the fundamental picture for gold has never been brighter. All the things we talk about, eventually it has to go up. But until the cycles start powering it further, until the technical indicators start flashing, you know, buy, it doesn't matter what the fundamental picture is. For years and years, sugar was selling for a penny or 2 pennies a pound, to the point where it didn't even pay to produce the stuff. But you have millions of people around the world in the sugar industry. You couldn't just tell them to go home. And then one day it went up to 12 cents because, you know what? The cost of production was a loser. But what happened was that eventually the cycles turned and then it became a winner. Because until you have the technical confirmation of the fundamental case, the market is going to do what it's going to do. And it's not what you think it's going to do.
Yeah. I would love to find some tools that make entry points more clear, because I think that's the biggest problem for a lot of investors is when to do things. You know, you see something and it looks like an interesting story, but is now the day you get in? And then do you get in all at once, or do you kind of feather your way in? And and then when do you sell? You know, when something's going up, how do you sell? How do you decide whether to pass up the easy money that you'll get if it just keeps on going up by taking profits? Those are hard things to do, and some reliable indicators would be great. And I know there are some out there.
It's very
never
difficult.
Trust any of them. Yeah,
it's very difficult to know a top. It's very difficult to know a bottom, because just like the Bitcoin, people got caught up at 19,000 and it was going to $100,000 Bitcoin. That's what they were saying. Remember that? That wasn't that long ago. We knew
that's why it's so hard to sell, because when something has been going up for a long time, experts come out of the woodwork telling you why it can go up 500% more.
Mm-hmm.
And then they disappear. You never see them after the asset crashes back down to, one third price.
They were selling you derivatives.
Yeah.
They were selling you derivatives based on the Zimbabwean dollars and stuff, you know.
But you know, it's hard not to be sucked into that, because these guys sound like they know what they're talking about.
But they don't.
And that's because they were right for the past year, where they came out a year ago and said, oh, it's going to double. And then it doubles. And they've got that certainty that comes from having been right one time, you know.
Yeah.
And when you see them all around you, it's hard not to be sucked in.
Yeah.
And that's the problem that most investors have, is that we get sucked in at both the top and the bottom by the consensus, which is made up of people who are really articulate and really certain about their ideas. So,
hey, remember the woman, I think she called the crash in 87. Was it Maria Bartiromo? Was that her? If it wasn't
the money honey in CNBC? I don't think she ever called a crash.
Well, one female analyst called a crash, and she was never right again after that. But it was always, she called the crash. Yeah. Remember that one?
I do know who you mean. Yeah.
Yeah. She was never right a day after it. And, you know, so yeah, fundamentals matter, but technicals matter as much. And so, like, the one thing, like, man, when you have these mining stocks and they go up 10, 12 times, they could go up 3 times, triple in a week when they're moving, sell half the thing. All right. It's okay not to cash in at 100% at the top, but get your money out. You know, you never go broke taking a profit, the old Wall Street saw. I mean, that's just one. It's not very technical, and we all love to have it, but if I had done this during the .com, you know, I'd have 10 times more money than I have now, because I wouldn't have gotten brought down, you know, literally held down and drowned during the crash. So that's one thing. Selling rules for losses, to minimize losses, are important, really important. You know, the IBD one, Investors Business Daily, for their CAN-SLIM system of 6-8%, stock goes down, sell it. But you got to be able to, you got to have some exceptions there. Cause I did that with Qualcomm. I bought it at 90 something, and you know, Qualcomm went up to $1,000 a share. It went up tenfold after I sold it, according to that anyways. So you know what I'm saying?
You shouldn't have sold.
I know. I knew that afterwards.
That's what I'm saying. What if you have a Qualcomm?
Yeah.
And that's what it feels like. When you got something that has tripled, you think you've got a 10 bagger.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to pass up the next 7 doublings or the next 700% on the original purchase price move.
Take half.
Yeah.
Just take half.
Yeah.
You know, this is what I told people about Bitcoin. I could read you the article. I'm not going to bore you. And I know we're pressed for time. But during the whole Bitcoin thing, so I wrote an article, I think it was either 14 or 16,000 in December of 2017. And I said, we all know that Bitcoin's going to infinity. So if you were to sell half your Bitcoin right at this moment, you would have half of infinity. Half of infinity is better than nothing, right? So just look at it that way. The stock's going to go up to infinity, but you're going to get half of infinity. So it's not such a bad thing, right?
Yeah. As you say that, I'm thinking of Great Bear Resources.
Yeah, the perfect one that you should sell.
Junior miner. It's up. It's a 10 bagger in the past year.
Yes.
Okay. And I have some. And so I'm trying to decide what to do, because taking a lot of profits out of a 10 bagger means you made 10 times your money with what you sell. Yeah. That's unusually good.
Well, that you could sell 25%. Just take your money out.
Yeah.
So you got a free ride, right?
Yeah. Third. But the numbers that the company is generating now are so great that it's easy to make the case for, instead of $5 a share like today, $20 a share is a more reasonable valuation.
Put sell stops in place so you don't lose your profit.
But,
give yourself a margin. Do something to take the emotions out of it, because what you're describing right now is greed. The good thing is, a great bear, it's at the beginning of the bull. Okay. So the fact that it's done that now, you've got justification for continuing. But you don't want to be too greedy, right? What happens to pigs?
Well, they get round tripped. Yeah. And that is the worst feeling in investing, right? Yeah. To watch something go way up, not sell it, and then watch it go way back down until you have a loss on something that you had a huge gain in.
I know.
Everybody's experienced that, and that's a terrible feeling. So you're right. You got to take some profits when things go up.
Yeah, but you're experienced here. I mean, you are a professional. So the key is just to have sell metrics, analytics, have a sell plan in place, have a plan. Hey, one other quick thing, and then I know you got to go. Germany's economy is tanking, and you have basically tied that to their trade war casualty. How is that so?
Yeah. Germany's a big deal. We should be talking about that, because that's basically the prettiest economy in the world right now. They run trade surpluses and occasional budget surpluses, and their interest rates are really low, but their inflation is really low too, and they've got zero unemployment. And yet their economy is slowing down dramatically now, and that's huge for Europe, and it's huge for the rest of the world, because it's a notable economy. And part of that is trade war casualty. As you said, they sell a lot of stuff to the U.S. and to China and to the rest of Asia. And if our trade war is slowing down consumption over there, which it is, then Germany gets hit by that. Meanwhile, Europe is a mess. You know, the only reason the EU isn't in a capital D depression right now is Germany. You know, if you took them out of the equation, that would be a really ugly part of the financial world. And things aren't getting any better there. The only reason, Germany has been doing basically vendor financing, where they lend money to Italy and Spain and Greece, and then those guys use that money to buy German stuff. You know, it pumps up German numbers, but that debt will never be paid back, and it has to move on to Germany's balance sheet at some point. So when that happens, Germany's going to go from being this bulletproof, shining example of how to run an economy successfully to a sick economy that we're all worried about and we don't want to emulate. And they could pull down a lot of financial markets with it. That's a year ahead possibility, and it should be paid attention to.
Yeah, that was what's been holding up Europe for a decade now, almost two decades. You know, this thing's been going on for so long, John. So it's a great point. Vendor financing is always a bad idea. Just look what happened to the car companies during the Great Recession. The only things they were making money on prior to the recession was their captive finance arms, and then they all went bankrupt after the Great Recession because default rates went way up. Effectively, Germany's been painting a false picture of prosperity because they keep making profits and then plow the profits into vendor financing, so they can sell more and make more profits. That's a Ponzi scheme. It has to unravel at some point, right?
Yes, but it's like the you know, when to sell a stock thing. You don't know exactly when it's going to unravel.
Yes.
But the fact that the numbers are getting worse as we speak means that the unraveling could be beginning now. And that's why we need to watch it, because if it picks up momentum, then all of a sudden Germany is added to all the other crazy stories out there. And, you know, there's a point at which the financial system just won't be able to handle any more crazy stories.
Yeah. And we're getting to that point very quickly, just like we've gotten to the end here. Make sure you go check out John's site, dollarcollapse.com, for the best writing, certainly that you're going to find on our precious metal sector and the economy. Check us out, financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Sign up for both our newsletters. Email us, kl@carrylutz.com. Any questions or comments? If you're listening on YouTube, please share this, like it, subscribe it. We've been getting so many people on YouTube, thousands of people every week listening to us, John, built up over the years all of a sudden. I guess we're like the stop clock. We've been right twice a day, and that has a certain appeal to an audience out there. Anyways, till next Monday, we'll see you then.
See you, Carrie.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.